Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Yes, dear to be different, just wonderful to have all of you tuning in, whether it's via the audio streaming, Midway 1548 in Satellite Islam, and we are truly, truly blessed and grateful for all the things that we have been started with. And this morning we've got a wonderful guest, but before we go on to the guest, the weather out there has been beautiful, looking out the windows and the studio of Radio Islam, blue skies, clear, clear, and a bit of a nip in the early mornings and evenings. But truly, truly, we are truly blessed for all the wonderful weather that we have. Looking at some of the reports coming in, they're saying that we are in for a very dry spell as well, and we'll be talking some of those things this morning. This morning, all things gardening, and we've got a wonderful guest, and that's Kerry Goodwin. Now, Kerry comes from a family that is all involved in gardening, mum, dad, brother, sister-in-law, all of them involved, and truly a family that has the hands-on when it comes to trends, comes to what is happening in the world of gardening. Hi, good morning, Kerry.
Good morning, Ismail. How are you?
Thank you very much. And I know you're sitting under a wonderful tree. Tell us about the weather on your side. I know it's brilliant on that side. Tell us something about that.
It is really gorgeous. I mean, to be awake from 5 o'clock this morning and just almost watch the sunrise and hear the birds, I think, you know, everybody should be out and about and in their gardens at this time of the year because everything is looking beautiful. The plants are blossoming. You know, it's just a burst of color. And it's inspirational. And as you said earlier, it's a blessing to be in this environment and just be surrounded by such beauty.
And I think you have the opportunity of being around it all the time. You know, it's just you know, some of us, some, you know, and then you have the opportunity of changing the environment because every time you see a different color coming, you see a different trend, and you are truly, truly blessed to be in that particular environment.
Now, very lucky.
Sorry about that. Kerry, now, you know, when I spoke to you during the course of the week, and somebody mentioned you were doing some studies, I was quite interested to know what you were doing because coming in from the family of, you know, being involved in the horticultural world, and what was it, something involved with the environment? And like you let on, something with water. Tell us something about that.
Okay. Well, I almost was listening when you were talking earlier about how the weather and how it's, you know, it's still nippy in the mornings, but then it's getting hot and dry. And, I mean, this week they're thinking we might have a heat wave. And our industry is such, the horticultural industry and people's gardens are so dependent on water. And when we had those water shortages earlier in the year and that sort of thing, it made me think, sure, we need to try and see of other ways of how to water better in garden centers. And for growers, you know, maybe we use drip irrigation instead of overhead irrigation. Or, so my studies goes along the lines of actually trying to water better and use the resource of water that we have better in the industry, in the nurseries that we, yeah, that are around us. And then for customers to see it, because often nurseries are seen as, well, we're greening, you know, we're all part of this big, greater green industry. But sometimes we might, wouldn't like to say leave a tap on, but, you know, there might be a tap dripping. So we're not always following the most or the best environmental practices. And my studies are to try and create a manual so that nurseries and gardeners and growers can try and follow the best international practices for environmental awareness. So it's not only water, it would look at energy and, you know, natural resources like our compost and peat and that type of thing. So that's along the line, sort of where I'm going.
Well, we wish you everything of the best, and I know that you can make an impact because I think this is such an important study. But saying all of that, you know, or looking at the patterns and the trends coming through, they do say that we have, you know, one time it's La Nina, and then the next time it's El Nino and those type of things. So we're in for that period of time where they say that rains would be scarce until up to February. Now, we hope it's not true. I hope it's not true because I know Natal has been going through that. You know, Natal has been going through that period, and we know that when you hear people going on holiday, Bali too, or, you know, taps on for 2 hours a day in certain parts of KwaZulu Natal, and it could well come onto our side. We don't have the rains. Tell us something about that.
Okay. I think slowly the growers have become more aware, and as gardeners, we've become more aware of how we can use the water in our gardens and how we have to water correctly. So Life as a Garden this month, they've actually published posters that will go into the nurseries to do with mulching. And I think this is one of the best ways to try and save water in your garden. You know, you shouldn't ever have bare soil patches, even around your plants. Either try and put other plants around them. So it kind of keeps the soil moisture in the soil. And, or you could put bark. A lot of people are using bark or macadamia nuts. Or some people, you know, around their pots, they put beautiful stones. So they've got a standard and then these beautiful stones below it. all those are type of mulches which actually help prevent the weeds from growing through. And they try and keep as much moisture as possible in the soil and available to the plant. And that's what we would recommend as one of the best ways going forward in this time of El Nino, to water like that and also to water deeply. You know, sometimes you see when I'm driving around, I see the sprayers of different places. They go on for 10 minutes and then they go off. And then the next day they go on again for 10 minutes. And it doesn't, they help and they keep the plant moist, but you really want your plants to be strong from the roots down. So for me, it would be better to water, even if it's your grass or your garden, for longer, less often. And then you're trying to encourage the roots to go and look for water. And it makes it a very strong plant from underneath. So if it's, you know, really hot on top, at least the roots are deep down and cooler in the earth. And that's what we're trying to, you know, suggest that gardeners go for as well.
Now, Kerry, you spoke, Kerry, you spoke about mulching, and, you know, we have two types. Well, we have, you know, the bark and the chip. There's also a trend towards living mulch, so taking, you know, low-growth plants and so forth. Tell us something about that.
Well, I was going to say, that's one of my favorites, because I'm not a big person for hard landscaping and lots of stones and everything. But when you put in ground covers, like at the bottom, if you had a rose bush, and then instead of just having your soil underneath it, or, as I said, macadamia nuts or bark chips, you could put irrigaron. It's a beautiful little white daisy-like flower, and that would just cover all the ground underneath your rose bush. And it wouldn't take any, well, it wouldn't take more, too much nutrients away from your rose bush, and then again, it keeps the soil moist. Or some people also like to use mint. Mint is a fantastic living mulch, because there it goes in between your pavers. And then when you walk in, you can step on it, and it's like an instant foot massage, because your feet would smell of mint. So there's quite a lot of different ground covers that you can use that are very drought resistant. And then they, you know, whether they're for sun or for shade, and they're just basically going to cover the soil, add a little bit of greenness. Some of them do have little, you know, petite. You don't really buy them for their flowers, but every time they do flower, you're like, oh, this is pretty. And they would just, again, keep your soil level and your temperature in the soil cooler, because you don't have that sun baking down onto the soil all the time. And they work as very good mulches.
Now, those are the living mulch. And when we also talk about what people in the past regarded as waste or discarded them as leaves and grass clippings, tell us about that as mulch. How effective would that be? Is there a good thing to use the leaves or not leave or not use the grass clippings? Tell us something about that.
I was going to say, to use your leaves is a fantastic idea. So, you know, a lot of people rake up all their leaves from their lawn, and then they go and put them in plastic bags and put them on the pavement, and they end up on a skip somewhere, which is, or a landfill, which is great for the landfill. But you're just taking away a whole niche in your garden. If you took those leaves and scattered it in amongst your flower beds again, you're providing habitats for little earthworms and other insects to make homes, and you're providing a mulch that's something you don't even have to buy or pay for, and slowly the leaves would break down and provide nutrients for the soil and the plants. So to me, the leaves are a really wonderful, wonderful one to put in. Grass clippings, people get a bit more cautious of putting grass clippings because there's often weeds within your grass. And so when you go and put your grass clippings into your flower beds, you just have to be careful that you're not taking the dichondra or the onion weed that might have been in your lawn into your flower bed, which makes it very difficult to get out. So the grass clippings, I would say rather put those into your compost heap and let the compost break down and almost kill the weeds by degrade, and then rather use that compost as a type of mulch in your garden than the grass clippings direct.
You know, now you've given us all these, you know, fantastic ideas, and we're trying to encourage, you know, our gardeners to go that way, because when we look around there, we find that we're really having a battle about, you know, about greening and the carbon emissions and things, and all of these, in a small way, contributes to a healthy environment. So it does not matter, and you don't ever think that it's only you that's doing it. So it's not going to have an impact. Everyone who does it adds to this bigger group of people, this bigger, you know, movement, and that's what we want. Is that right?
Absolutely. I mean, as I say, with the grass clippings, and I just think now, even at the complex that I live on, we got a notice the other day to say, you know, we put all our leaves in a skip outside, and I'm thinking, oh my goodness, why are we doing that? We should be putting them back into our garden beds. But sometimes I always think, we think it's easier to let the other person do it. And actually, it's just the little small steps. And I think that whole thing with recycling, we've spoken about it before, is using what you're creating in your kitchen or from your garden, putting it back into your garden to create habitats, to invite, you know, if you're busy doing some pruning, rather leave some of those branches, even though they're dead and you've cut them off, leave them somewhere in your garden for some insect or bird to make a home, which is going to attract some other worms. And you just get this whole life cycle going in your garden, which would in turn make your garden a living place. You know, so it's not only the flowers that are providing life, but a whole microcosm of just different insects and birds. And I think that's what we want. That's what people want to see. Now, I get quite nervous when I see children playing or doing gardens on their iPads, you know, and they're digging a hole, but it's all to do with moving their finger around. And they don't actually go outside and feel and see and touch the soil. And you just want to create this variety. And I think one of the most wonderful things about this time of the year is each time you walk outside, something new is flowering. You know, your garden is coming to life after winter. And so it just is continuously surprising you and amazing you. And I think that's what we have to appreciate. And then, as I said, recycle to give it the food to be able to continue to do that.
You know, Kerry, all that we've been speaking about is about a mindset, a shift of mindset. You know, people have come in with very different ideas. Perhaps the older folks have come in and, you know, said they wanted lawns, I beg your pardon, you know, beds that we swept, and all those mindsets have to be changed. And it's a process. It's not something that happens just overnight. Now, looking at what's coming on the news, you know, of, you know, the United Nations and what's happening out there, lots about the green environment, lots about how we having to leave a legacy for our children and grandchildren. That seems to be a very strong element, and this movement is growing stronger and stronger, and you find that governments are now coming and say, we all have to be part of this. But it's not just the responsibility of the government. I think it's responsible of every one of us. Is that right?
Yes, absolutely. They've actually, the United Nations is using a new, we used to use sustainable living.
Yes, that's right.
And, you know, everything has become sustainable and how we're continuing. But I think sustainable became such an environmental concept that people who were more focused on economy and money and jobs and that type of thing, they didn't really put the two together all the time. So now, I think in the latest document, which was 2012, they've created the term green economy. So it's even in your business place, and they're trying to make sure that throughout your whole lifestyle, you just have in the back of your mind, how green is this? You know, I think a really good example would be the Sandton Mobility Festival this month.
As an eco-mobility.
You know, eco-mobility festival, where they're just taking a really dynamic business center and saying, well, let's try and reduce our carbon footprint in the center. And that's what I think green economy is all about. It's about thinking in the back of your mind, if I plant this tree, you know, I've flown a lot this week or this month, so I'm going to plant a tree to reduce my carbon emissions. Or just using the environment that we have to better it and not completely abuse it, rather use it and enjoy it. Because I think we just keep taking and taking from our environment. And it could be a simple thing like the leaves. You know, the leaves are falling off the tree. We take them, put them in a bag, and put them on a landfill. Whereas we could just put them back. And the environment and our soil would say, thank you so much for giving me the extra nutrients back.
You know, whilst we're talking about this green economy and the inconvenience that's going to happen, eco-mobility and all that, you know, a few of us may be inconvenienced by that, but we should look at the greater good. And the greater good, of course, is, as you're explaining, is that, you know, we need to understand that what we are doing, are we replenishing what we've taken away from the soil, what we've taken away from the earth? Mm-hmm. And looking at some of the studies coming through, and there was a study recently that when they counted plants, of course, they found there was so many more billions more than they thought there was. But that still wasn't enough. That still isn't enough, because every time we do some of these things, we cut down forests, you know, deforest places, we do things without knowing, you know, the consequences. And now when we look back, we say, we shouldn't have done this, and this is what we should be doing.
Yeah, No, that's very, very true. And I also just think the ability to be able to walk or bicycle or use public transport, it means you're not concentrating so much on the road, and you're actually going to have the opportunity to enjoy the beautiful environment that surrounds us. So it's almost like to, and I want to say slow you down, but just to appreciate how beautiful our environment is. And I think it will make people more conscious of what they can do to give back to the earth and what the earth is almost doing to give back to them. I mean, when you take a walk outside, you just feel that your whole soul is renewed, your body is renewed. And when you're sitting in a car and you're worried about, you know, the person in front of you and the taxi driver next to you, you're not enjoying the journey and what the environment is actually providing for you, I feel. So
I think that's so true, you know, because if you walk around, and I went back to the launch of the Eco-Mobility, and we were taken to such a beautiful environment. I said to someone, you know, the problem is that, or the challenge is that we in our cars, we don't see the beauty, but just step outside and you take a walk and you slow down and you see these beautiful trees and you see these plants coming up and say, wow, where was this all the time? It was there all the time. It was there. But unfortunately, you know, you haven't seen it because you're busy whizzing past these things, and before you realize, well, fine, you're sort of, you know, the aggravation levels were rising because the guys in the car in front of you, back next to you, whatever was happening, and you were just sort of being you know. And I said to them, I said, you know, look at this. What a beautiful environment. It looks like an oasis. I said, when you're here, you wouldn't even have thought you were in the middle of Sandton. And, you know, I was really, and this is the second time I was amazed, I was blown sort of away to find that there was this sort of oasis within this concrete jungle. But like you said,
it's gorgeous.
You know, yeah, but the thing is, you know, Kerry, we don't understand or we don't look at it, and then we forget that it's even there. And we are truly blessed in South Africa, well, specifically in the north, you know, where we have this whole forest of, within an urban, you know, it's this urban environment, we actually have this forest. And I hope that same thing is being recreated slowly now in the south. But this is what we have. Do we have time to look and admire and say, this is what we want to replicate all over?
Yeah, absolutely. And I know when we're talking about the Sandton area, you know, you've got the forest, but then you've got those beautiful strelitzias going up one of the roads. And I just think there is a lot, and the fragrance. You know, plants are providing a beautiful smell for us. When I look at some of the top 10 plants Life as a Garden recommends each month, the top 10 plants for the month. And I was having a look, and it's like the Just Joey Rose. You know, that is a beautiful yellow, pale butter yellow rose, and it's fragrant. And you don't smell things when you're whizzing around in your car, but when you're walking on a bicycle, I think it's almost inspiration when you drive, you know, you smell something. That gives me a bit of a boost to walk a little bit further or cycle a bit faster to follow the scent.
But that's what it's all about, Kerry. It's just that. And then, of course, to find a green space, wherever it is, a small space, a bigger space. And then you're sort of now suddenly made acutely aware of all these things. But like you said, when you whiz past and all these things, you forget that it even exists. And I think this is what this whole, whilst the eco-mobility, all these things are car, you know, decreasing the carbon footprint. This is also that we can leave a legacy behind. I think this is what it is. The world is now saying, we've done so much wrong. We need to right all those wrongs. And these are some of the movements that's going on. And again, my plea is to don't think you're isolated. If you do it and everybody else doesn't mean you should stop. You should continue.
Absolutely.
Because if you're going to stop, that means it's one person less. You know, I always know, and I've been told the story of the starfish by a friend of mine. You know, he was walking the beach and all the starfish washed, and, you know, and we threw one in. Somebody asked, but what? He said, well, at least I made a difference to that one. So, you know, that type of, you know, analogy that we can get out of this whole thing. So I think this is what we're talking about.
It gives me goosebumps when you tell me that story, because it's so true. We just have to make the difference
thing. Sorry about that. Carry on.
No, I was just, it's just planting the one plant that makes somebody smile. I mean, when I was cycling in Parkhurst the other day, then there's the most beautiful, beautiful distichus, and they've formed it on top of their head. So, you know, when you go past a fence or a wall, you normally have those spikes sticking up.
Mm-hmm.
It looks quite ugly. So they've covered the top of their wall, so I'm sure there are spikes underneath this mass of light purple or lilac flowers. And it's probably for about 100 meters. And I just thought, wow, that is gorgeous. And it just made me think, wow, we don't have to have these you know, hard walls and fences with trying to keep people out. We can use plants to soften them and just make people feel at home in an environment, whether they're driving, walking, cycling, whatever it is, that they think, sure, I can do that at home too. You know, I can soften and make it more welcoming, the place in which I live or my community.
Well, Katie, we've got to leave that at that, and when we come back after the news, we continue. I think there's lots we still have to chat about, this food, this colour plants, herbs. Oh, there's a whole other thing, but let's see how much we can cover. But thanks, we'll chat to you in a couple of minutes. Take care.
Okay, thank you very much, Ismail. Bye.
Bye.
Did you know that gardening is the fastest growing hobby in the world? Islam highly recommends planting trees and urges people to protect them to the extent that planting a tree is considered as an act of worship for which special prayer is recommended. The Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, unless you are compelled, do not cut down a tree. So join Ismail Pariyava every Sunday between 8:30 and 9:30 a.m. on the program Dare to Be Different.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Yes, Dare to Be Different. My name is Ismail Pariyava. Just wonderful to have all of you tuning in, whether it's via the audio streaming, medium wave 1548 in Satellite Islam. Looking out, like we said earlier on, beautiful weather, brilliant sunshine, and if you are in the garden, please make the necessary precautions. Make sure that you're wearing a hat and your neck's covered, and that you have some water nearby so that when you are feeling dehydrated that you have enough water to drink. Remember that that's important. Wonderful time to be out in the garden, burst of color, lots of activity, and we've got a fantastic guest, and that's Kerry Goodwin. Hi, good morning, Kerry.
Hi, Ismail. How are you?
Thank you very much. I know you've been up from 5 this morning and you're telling us about the chirping of the birds and you've heard the insects and all of that happening. Now, being out in that time of the morning in the garden, you know, I always say that it's being in that sacred space. And that space that you can count as your own when you are there with your own thoughts. And you can do so many things and, you know, you can sort of get back and introspect and say, look, fine, this is what, you know, whatever you want to do. But I think it's such a wonderful time to be out in the garden.
Absolutely. And I just think it's important to reiterate, I know even with our teams over the last 2 weeks with the temperature rising like it has, we've just said to them, you know, they should be carrying water bottles around all the time so they do drink at least 2 liters of water a day. Because they, I mean, when it first got so hot, we had one or two people come in to say, oh, you know, they've got a headache and can we help them out? And I was like, no, you just have to keep drinking more and more water. And I think now we're slowly starting to instill that into them, that when it is these temperatures, we have to drink a lot.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sorry, so I think it's the idea of rehydrating to make sure that you have enough water in your body, so keep on drinking and keep the bottles at hand. Is that right?
Yeah. And it's almost the same with your plants. When we were talking about how to be more water-wise, you know, when it comes to watering your garden as well, you either want to water early in the morning, and that's always actually one of the best times to water, and water your garden for, say, 20 minutes at a time every second or third or fourth day even, depending on the different plants that you have. Rather than watering, well, please don't anybody water in the middle of the day. It's just a complete waste of water. You know, it's so hot and the evaporation levels are so high that the water just hardly even touches the soil if it's coming from a sprinkler. And then in the afternoon, which a lot of people do tend to water, you know, I think they find it peaceful to come home from work, take their watering can or their hose pipe and go and water their garden, which is also a really nice idea. But when we're having these beautiful hot days and our nighttime temperatures are still, they haven't dropped too much yet, it creates a humid environment. And because we had such a mild winter, this humid environment in the evening is actually an ideal breeding ground for pests, for fungus, for black spots on your roses, for the red spider mites that might be thinking, oh, you know, this is so nice and cool. And we just have to be careful when we water late in the afternoon or in the evening because you are creating an environment where pests would thrive.
And, you know, we have had this many years back with the impatiens, you know, where we had them all just flopping on us because of all these type of conditions. And have they been able to sort of overcome that, Kerry?
Well, actually, when you mentioned the El Nino, I was thinking this is the one good thing that might occur with the El Nino effect. Is because with the impatience, it's an airborne fungus that kills them. So to me, it's kind of like you get, when you get the flu, you know, every year the flu comes around, different strains of it. but sometimes people are affected and other times people aren't. So I've had quite a few customers in the nursery over the last few weeks saying actually their impatience last year, especially those that they planted in pots, so they weren't at a lower soil level, they actually survived the whole year through, which I was quite impressed with. But when we go now into the El Nino and we're having that hot, dry weather, actually I think our impatience will be fantastic. But if all of a sudden we do get that thunderstorm or shower in the afternoon, in the middle of December, and our temperatures drop again, then that's when the fungus will actually breed and our impatience won't do so well. So it really is a very weather-dependent disease. And, I mean, until that disease comes around, it's always in the air, but until your plant gets infected, they actually are, I mean, those are beautiful plants. They just bring color and an abundance of color into those shady spots where not much else will grow wonderfully.
Yeah, I think it's about the splash of color and, you know, the abundance, and I think that's what we're looking at. But Gary, yeah. You know, burst of color, and we're at that time of the year where things, when you go into a nursery or garden center, you're tempted and you go in with a trolley and you say, well, fine. And before you know, you're bloated and you know the syndrome. You come in then you found, wow. You must have seen it happening quick. You've seen it over and over, and you said, must say, wow, what are these people going to do with all these things? But, I mean, that's a syndrome. What advice would you give people wanting to buy lots of color? Tell us a little bit about that.
Okay. So when you have, and I'll just quickly go back to the impatient story, because we've had that problem for, I think it's over 5 years now, the growers or breeders have actually found a different variety of impatient that has the same performance as the old impatient Walleriana. And it's called Impatience Bounce. So it's, it comes in four packs, and it's the main colors that we've got at the moment are a white, a lilac, and a pink blush, a violet and a pink blush. And it's a, that one's going to, that is a more disease resistant, almost like our New Guineas were. But where our New Guineas, the Impatience there, they flower, 70% flower, 30% leaf. Mm-hmm. The new Bounce would be very similar to the old Impatience, where it's almost like 90% flowers and you see very little foliage. So that's quite a nice new thing to have in your garden.
Sorry, man, sorry, what was the name, Kerry? I was just trying to write that down.
Oh, okay, it's called Impatience Bounce.
So it's an Impatience Bounce, and you get them into, you know, different, you know, six pack, and is that what it is?
It comes in a four pack and in pots. They would tend to be slightly more expensive because of the research that's gone into making them disease resistant.
Okay.
And the reason that they're called Bounce is if you get home or in the morning when you wake up and they're a little bit thirsty, they might, you know, look like they're falling over, but you basically give them a little bit of water and they bounce right back up again. So it's just that rewarding plant that will thrive if you just give it a little bit of TLC, and it tells you when it needs the TLC. So I just think it is one of the, it's a nice to have new plants to show that the South African nursery industry is actually trying to help gardeners have beautiful spots of color where we did have the old impatience, and maybe they don't always do so well anymore. So,
you know, just talking about, you know, TLC and so forth, I looked again strange at the article this week, and somebody said, well, you've sure become like Prince Charles. And I looked at the article and said, what does it mean? He says, well, talk to your plants. So I just laughed. I said, well, fine, that thing's coming back again. But, Terry, I think we all need to understand that plants need this care. They need this, you know. And you've spent so much money out there buying all of this thing, and you've got to make sure that you look after them. Because if you don't water and feed, I think two things that I've learned over the years now is two things that we seem to neglect, many of us, is either we overwater, underwater, and we forget to feed. I think feed is something that's, you know, very low on people's agenda. They think, well, fine, once you've bought a plant and you've got it from the nursery, it will just work wonders, and I don't think that's true.
No. I think it definitely is. You know, in the wintertime, I think we tend to overwater, because we forget that the plants aren't using as much water. When it comes to summer now, we see a lot of plants with the, well, as soon as your plants, the leaves, the edges of the leaves go a little bit crispy, then they're actually saying, you know, I'm thirsty, please give me water, because the plant isn't getting enough water from the soil to be able to, I want to say pump it, or distribute it to all the extremities, to the edges of the leaves. So your plants are quick to tell you that they're suffering. you know, especially when you come back to the feeding. Plants are, they living things and they need food, and although they can make their own, they can't make all the nutrients, or they can't get all the nutrients that they need from the soil anymore, because our soil has, you know, we haven't replenished it. So we have to give fertilizers to replenish, or add compost to replenish the nutrients in our soil so that our plants can do well and survive.
Yeah, I think those are so important, you know, pointers that we need. If we are going to go out into the garden, these are things that we need to be aware of so that we don't make the same mistakes. Now, we're speaking about, you know, color and so forth. It's also a time where, you know, lots of people are talking about food security. We've done this on a number of occasions, where people wanting to know what they're growing, what they're eating, and how to, you know, sort of get the best out of it. Now, this is an ideal season to do all of that. You can get both herbs and vegetables. Tell us about some of that. And also, is it possible to, you know, get a good yield or good harvest if you have limited space and in containers as well?
Yes. A lot of the plants that we grow now, you can get varieties that will, smaller varieties that will grow really well in containers. So especially your tomatoes, you know, you could put a little trellis in your pot, and your tomato could grow up that, and you get the little yellow pears or the cherries. So you do get smaller varieties of the fruit and veggies that you could put into containers. And so you don't need a lot of space to be able to provide good salad for yourself. Or one of my favorites at the moment is you get the most delicious different lettuce mixes. So it would be called Simply Salad Garden. And it would be a tatsoi mixed with a mustard mixed with a frilly lettuce. But they almost come in one pellet when you sow the seed. So when you buy it in a seedling tray from the nursery, your little cavity that you plant in, or the plant that you're planting, would have three or two different types of leafy greens in the little cavity. So it's not like you're now planting. When I was younger, we used to plant six butter lettuces.
Mm-hmm.
For, you know,
right. So now you've got a ready-made mix here.
Yes. So now the growers have got these lovely things that are different ones. You know, you get a gourmet mix that's got different other, as I said, lots of lovely, because lettuce isn't the same as it used to be where it just was lettuce.
Mm-hmm.
You get tart-tasting lettuce now, and red lettuces, and it's really encouraging people who maybe don't eat salad to actually start eating salads and different things. Life of the Garden did a beautiful article on annuals, the flowers that you could put in your salads. So, you know, like marigold flowers, which we often use those are doing beautifully at the moment. You use them as a deterrent. I put them around my roses, or I put them next to my veggie garden to keep the pests away because they smell so bad. But the petals of those you could add into your salad, and they give it a kind of spicy taste. Or if you were having, I would say in the summer, cold soups, you could also add them there to add a little bit of color. And the same with the impatiens that we were talking about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
You can add those into your salads or into your juices, into your cocktails that you're having in the evening. And those little things to help you, you know, it just makes it pretty, and it adds a touch of elegance when you put in a flower petal into your food. So I don't, when we're talking about food security and sustainability, there is those, you know, green peppers. We have lots of customers who are buying chilies now and putting them in their garden, because this is an ideal time for chilies. And I think there must be at least, if you're planting from seed, 10 different varieties that you can get. And there's lots of new little ones. There's one that's called Cute Stuff. And it's a little chili, so it's ideal for your little potted balcony garden. You know, as long as it gets 5 hours of sun, you're going to have amazing chilies come December, January. So I think there is a variety of things that you can grow in a small space, and you don't have to continually go to the shop to get fresh produce. You could walk out onto your balcony or into your garden and just pick something. And that's the way we should be looking at it. I mean, that's also, again, reducing our carbon footprint by hundreds when you grow your own.
I've just got something that's come through. You know, they're saying that wanting to know about herbs. What do you think is the best herbs, both for culinary and medicinal use? Could you perhaps list something? Someone's just, I'm not sure. that type of a question.
Okay. So at the moment, the most common herbs are more your salad ones, again, your basil, your rocket, and that type of thing. But when you talk about medicinal things, I would look at your more perennial herbs, such as your lavender. Mm-hmm. I mean, the uses of the lavender leaf, you could put it in your biscuits. You could, you know, to add flavor. You could put it under your pillow to help you sleep better at night. You can take a sprig and run it under your bath water to have a calming effect. So lavender definitely has plenty of medicinal uses. And for me, I love mine. I have it as I come into my home in a pot. And I brush past it every morning. So as I'm opening my front door, opening my front door in the evening when I come home, I've got that lavender smell on my hands and I feel calm and at peace because that's what lavender does. The other one that's also a very beneficial herb to use in your cooking and well as medicinal is rosemary. So it's also a perennial herb. You know, you can use the skewers. You take the Tuscan blue one, that's long, straight skewers. You can use that on your braai. But then it also helps you with your memory. I know in the office we often joke, you know, when people say, oh, I've forgotten this or I've left this or I don't know where this is. We want to put pots of rosemary in our office just for a few days, and then we obviously would have to take them back outside again. But that smell, when you touch it or you crush the leaf, just a little leaf in your hand, has such an invigorating effect on your mind.
Wow.
And so, you know, I think there are lots of the little smaller herbs you're using for edible purposes, and they have medicinal properties as such, but definitely for me, the two things that every garden should have, or herbs, would be a lavender and a rosemary plant in it, because their overall properties are just all-encompassing. You know, you could use them for almost anything.
Question coming through, is it a good idea to plant cucumbers and does it need large space?
To plant, sorry, I missed it.
Cucumbers, and does it need a large space?
Actually, there's new little cucumbers called cucumber crunch. So those you could put in a 25-centimeter pot. And again, you would have to stake it a little bit or they're going to flow over the edge. So those ones wouldn't need a huge space. As soon as you start planting other cucumbers, you also could plant them so that they grow upwards rather than creep along the ground. So those would probably need more of a space. Like if you're planting cucumbers, I'm thinking you would work on 60 centimeters apart, mm-hmm. the seeds, to get good produce and to make them tasty. You know, when you're planting your veggies, you don't want to plant them all on top of each other because otherwise they're competing for nutrients and then they won't taste like you want them to taste. They will just be a little bit insipid. And the thing with planting veggies and herbs, again, is you actually do want to feed them. You know, you need to give them either a liquid feed every 2 weeks or a granular and fertilizer feed every 6 weeks. It's because you're using them, so you want them to continually replenish the nutrients that they are putting into the leaves or the roots or whichever part of the fruit or your flower you might be using.
Another question coming through with pesticides. You know, it's that time of the year. What should we be looking out for?
Oh, I think the pests are going to be dreadful this year because we had such a mild winter, which is very sad. With the heat coming along, you would have to look out for red spider mite under your rose leaves, on your foxgloves, hollyhocks, also in your pumpkins, those type of veggies that low close to the ground or creep along the ground, your squashes. You would just have to watch out for that. But if you're watering well and deep, the red spider mite doesn't like a lot of water, and so that actually you can slow down or almost prevent it by good watering. You shouldn't have a problem with red spider mite. And then I see, you know, the aphids are already having a glorious time and the snails are starting to creep everywhere. But I always like to, within the garden, whether it's the vegetable garden or the rose garden, whatever, I like to use Ludwig's insect spray because it's a canola oil-based garlic spray with a bit of pyrethrin. So it creates a beautiful smell of garlic throughout your garden for about 24 hours. But it's still very effective, but it doesn't have those poisons in it. If you were working on, you know, trying to get rid of your pests and for some reason, the problem when you use organic sprays is that you have to use them diligently for be able to kill the whole pet's lifestyle because they don't really leave a long residue on the plant to protect it. When you go for your more chemical alternatives, there you can spray once or maybe only twice, and you would have killed the pet's life cycle. So those would be the advantages or disadvantages. If you have the time, rather try and go the organic route. But if you just find that these pests just keep coming back and coming back, then maybe it's better to go the chemical route to get rid of them once and for all. And then, so that's the difference to do with the pesticides. Garden Ripcord is one of our general all-purpose chemical pesticides that works very well on numerous things.
Question with regards to Grindella. I've got a Grindella bush and it's got tiny Grindellas. Should I feed them? What should I feed them with?
Yes, you must definitely feed it. And you need to give it a 315 fertilizer. So the last number is the highest number, and that's potassium, and it's for fruit and flowering. So if you just give it a closed handful, and you can get a chemical or an organic 315, scatter it in at the bottom and water it in well, you'll just have the most delicious Grindellas probably within the next month or so.
Next question, I think it's the final one we're going to do. I planted garlic many months ago. When should I harvest this? What are the indications that it's ripe?
Okay, so garlic is very similar to your other rooting veggies, where when you start seeing the garlic plant almost popping out the top of the soil, like you would with a beetroot or a carrot, then you can slowly just put your hand down the sides, feel if the clove is of a reasonable size. If it is of a reasonable size, then I would harvest it then. So there's no fast rule. You know, your garlic cloves are normally, I'm just trying to look on my hand, double the size of a 5-rand coin, but you could feel it.
Okay.
Then you would be able to harvest it. You don't want to leave it into the soil for too long, otherwise it's going to give you, it's going to lose its flavor and taste.
Well, thank you very much. I think we've run out of time, but before we sign off, Carrie, just tell us where about you're going to be this morning, where are you and your nurseries and what you have in special.
Okay. We're at One Garden Center's Colorful Corner in Rand Park Ridge, and the other garden center is Colorful Splendor, and that's in Craigor Park. And what's really wonderful about both of them at the moment, and actually any garden center that you would be going into, is this is Rose Month. You know, the roses are having their first flush. So our rose special comes at the end of the month on the 16th of October. All our roses will be less 30%. But to prepare, we've put all our rose fertilizers on special, our rose mix and our macadamia nutshells on special for preparation for our rose special at the end of the month.
And just the directions, the one is on Bayers Nadir, that's the one in Rand Park Ridge, and the one in Craig Hall Park, what is the very best way to get there?
The one in Craig Hall Park is on Marlborough Avenue, on the corner of Marlborough and Richmond in Craig Hall Park. And the one in Honeydew is on the corner of Christian de Wet. We're one block up from Bayers Nadir, so on the corner of Christian de Wet and Dolphane.
Well, you take care. Thank you very much. Thanks for all the information. It's been highly
Thank
informative, and I've enjoyed it thoroughly, and I hope you wish you well with the exams. I know you're going to do fantastically well, and you're going to add so much more knowledge to the industry. You take care, Kerry.
Thanks very much, Ishmael. Have a lovely rest of the weekend.
You take it. Bye-bye.
Bye.
That was Carrie Goodwin. Yes, always lovely to talk to her. Lots of information, lots to, she's going to share that she shared with us. And like I said, comes from a family of a garden enthusiast and horticulturist. You know, we've spoken to her mother, Di, we've spoken to her brother. And so we've spoken to a number of their family members, but it's just always inspirational. Remember that if there's any queries, any questions that you have, you could, you know, send it through in the course of the week. And when we have the opportunity, we'll be able to answer some of those. You take care for me, inshallah, and we'll meet again. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.